welcome to Tune 2 Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. Coming up in this hour, adventure with the Captain Midnight series, one of radio's most popular juvenile programs on the air for about 10 years in syndication on the NBC Blue Network and mostly Mutual Radio. In this hour, we'll hear some of the earlier broadcasts from the Skelly Oil-sponsored run before Ovaltine sustained the show. Bill Boucher stars as Captain Midnight, ace aviator and commander of the Secret Squadron. This string of broadcasts is from the week of January 15th through the 22nd of 1940. Now on to the first episode, program number 227 in the series. It's Captain Midnight.
The Skelly Oil Company presents Captain Midnight. Captain Midnight, brought to you three times each week by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Choppers and Dealers. See, we have another swell treat for you tonight. You all seemed to enjoy hearing from Captain Balfour so much last week that I told the captain we'd like to hear from one of his own student pilots there at the Spartan School of Aeronautics. Well, it was no sooner said than done. So, here's young Henry Rankin, flying student from the Spartan School of Aeronautics in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Where's your home, Henry?
I live in Gastonia, North Carolina, sir.
Gastonia, North Carolina?
Yes, sir.
Well, listen, Henry, if you live in North Carolina, how'd you happen to choose the Spartan School of Aeronautics way out in Tulsa?
Oh, that is easy. I'd heard of the Spartan School for years. It's one of the best flying schools in the country. It's fully government approved, and they teach all branches of aviation, so a student isn't limited to just one phase of the industry.
Well, you seem to have some good reasons, all right. Are you a member of the famous Dawn Patrol there at the Spartan School?
Yes, sir. Every student pilot in the school is a member of the Dawn Patrol. I think it's one of the greatest flying clubs in the country. The biggest thrill of belonging to the Dawn Patrol is going on one of our big cross-country flights when we start out with as many as 15 planes and hop off for some city 500 or 600 miles away.
Hey, boy, that must be a thrill. I understand you're training pilots for Uncle Sam there at the Spartan School as well as private flyers.
Yes, that's true. We have a staff of 50 instructors and 67 training ships for the use of the student pilots.
Hey, I had no idea the school was that large.
Oh, yes, and that's not all. We have 17 modern buildings and 5 separate flying fields. Oh,
boy, I can see that's really some air school. But tell us now, Henry, what part of your student training do you like best?
Well, of course, the actual flying is the most fun. But all the work is mighty interesting to anybody that believes in the future of aviation. We study radio, navigation, meteorology, airplane mechanics, and even learn all about airplane construction there at the Spartan factory where they make those famous Spartan monoplanes.
Well, you certainly should be well trained when you graduate from the Spartan school. Say, when I buy my first plane, maybe you can be my chief pilot.
Okay, Don Gordon. And we'll use nothing but Skelly Air Max gasoline and good old Skelly Tagaline motor oil, just like we do down at the Spartan School.
All right, Henry. Boy, it's a deal. Thanks a lot for coming up here tonight. And I'm speaking for every Flight Patrol member when I say, happy landing. And now to Captain Midnight. The famous pilot constructed a revolving antenna with a circular base on which are marked the points of the compass in the hope of discovering which direction the mysterious radio signals are coming from. As our adventure opens today, the scene is late at night outside the workshop of Senor Paredes' hacienda. Captain Midnight, Chuck, and Pablo are gathered around the crude apparatus which Captain Midnight and Chuck have made. The sound of a voice speaking indistinctly is heard coming from the radio. Listen.
What can we do, me Capitan?
There's only one thing we can do, Pebbles. We've got to get this radio tuned sharper. Now then, Chuck, here's what you do. I'll see if I can tune it in clear, and if I do, you turn the volume up while I rotate the antenna.
Right you are, Captain Midnight.
I just can't seem to get it on the nose.
Well, the whole trouble is it requires a too sensitive setting.
Yeah.
Oh, listen to that. It's much better now.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Quiet, now quiet. I'll see if I can improve on that. No. That won't do. I should have left it where it was.
Help. We must have help at once. Injured man needs attention. Our location as follows.
Well, Why does he not continue?
Oh, he is continuing, Pebbles, but we can't hear him.
It must be Major Steele or Bud Conley. No one else would be using that wavelength.
Well, I'm going to give this thing a rest. I'm going to cut the switch. Oh, I want to look at this antenna, and we'll make some calculations.
I saw you moving the antenna. Did you get the position where the signals came in loudest?
Yes, as well as I could. Didn't have much time, though.
Oh, see, the time was very short. The voice came in, and then it goes.
What kind of a reading did you get?
Here it is. Here, take a look at it.
Jiminy Cricket, it's almost straight north.
No, no, wait, Chuck. No, it's a little bit east of north. Now, look, I have the base marked in units of 10. You see? It's almost at 10 degrees.
No, not exactly. I'd say that 12 would hit it closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just about it. All right, we call it 12.
Oh, but me amigos, I do not understand.
Well, it's like this, Pebbles. I turned this antenna until those signals came in loudest. Then I left it that way. Upon reading the degrees at the base, we find out the exact direction from which those signals were coming.
Oh, that's the wonderful thing. Now you know the direction in which to fly.
Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing, Pebbles. It may not be exact, but it's as close as we can get with what we have to work with. Now, where's that map we were looking at?
Oh, here's the map.
Oh, fine. Now, right now, put it out on this table. There.
Now then, let's see what kind of a direction 12 degrees would be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, there's a board with a straight edge over there, Pebbles. Hand it to me, will you, please?
Well, see me, Captain.
Ah, that's it, thanks. Now then, here we are at Senor Paredes Hacienda. Now, we draw a line straight north.
But how do you find the 12 degrees, mi capitan?
I'll show you that, Pebbles. Now, here's a circle I made with a piece of cardboard. You see, now it's marked off in degrees, starting with zero and going to 360. This is what we call a protractor. It's used to lay off courses on a map.
So you see, Pebbles, your aviation course is beginning right now.
Now then, you see, we put the protractor on the map with the center at the hacienda. The zero point, or true north, is turned so it coincides exactly with the true north line on the map. Now then, here. I put a dot with my pencil at 12 degrees, right there.
Shall I take off the protractor?
Yes, Chuck, go ahead.
There.
Now, Pebbles, I take the straight edge. I draw a line from the hacienda to the dot which I made with my pencil. Now, that will be the direction from which the signals came in loudest. And it'll be the course which we will have to follow.
Indeed. When will we start?
Well, at daybreak. And let's pray for good visibility. Because that's something we've got to have in order to do any good.
Oh, please, me Capitan. I should like very much to go with you.
Oh, listen. Someone's coming.
Oh, see, it's Don Juan and Senorita Patsy.
Ah, mi Capitan. You have had the success?
Well, Senor Pareda, yes and no. We heard a voice, all right, but we're not absolutely sure it was Major Steele or Bud Conley.
But did you hear someone? Was it on the Spartan's wavelength?
You bet it was, Patsy. Right on the nose.
See, and we hear the voice call for help, Patsy. And he tells about the injured man.
An injured man? Gosh, Captain Midnight, it must be Major Steele or Bud Conley.
You have made a decision, mi Capitan? You take off in the airplane?
Yes, Senor Pareda. I'm taking off at daybreak. Chuck and I have checked that ship left here by Gardo. Seems to be in good condition.
See, I have asked El Capitan Midnight to let me go along.
No, Pablo, you should not do that. If El Capitan Midnight wishes you to go with him, he will ask you.
Oh, that's all right, Senor Pareda. Pablo is eager to do some flying, and I don't blame him. Yeah, but the more I think of it, the more certain I am that we'll have to leave him behind.
Oh, it's a big disappointment, El Capitan.
No, Pablo, you must not say that. You should have not asked him in the first place.
Oh, now you'll have plenty of chance to do some flying later on, Pebbles. And here's the situation. The plane will only hold 4 people. And we'll have to take some supplies with us, too.
Gosh, if somebody's hurt, we've got to take along a first aid kit.
You bet we have. And we've got to be prepared to camp out if necessary.
But who are going, Captain Midnight?
I'll answer that, Patsy, by outlining what we need. Now, we're going to fly a course that, at best, is none too accurate. We'll have to fly high, and I need 2 persons, one on each side, to watch over the side of the ship. Well, they should be persons who have had a good deal of experience in picking out ground objects in the air. Well, very definitely, that means you and Chuck.
Gee, that's swell.
We'll do the best we can.
If Major Steele and Bud Conley have had a forced landing along this course, we've got to locate the plane the first time over. We won't have any time to waste making circles and flying back and forth.
Si, senor, es verdad. It is the truth.
And besides, we won't have any extra gas.
Well, but mi capitan, that makes 3 people. There's still room for one more.
Yes, I know it, Pebbles. And I know how anxious you are to go, but that other place must be taken by someone who's an experienced nurse. That means Patsy's mother.
Ma's a wonderful nurse.
And another thing, Ma knows how to set broken bones and fix up injuries.
You bet. Well, that makes up the crew.
But, mi capitan, you will return again? Well,
certainly, senor. I don't know exactly when, but we'll come back sometime.
But, gosh, Captain Midnight, what about Pinky Drake and Slim Poole? They've got to have some way to get home.
Well, I'll either fly back or send Chuck for Pinky and Slim. And, Pebbles here at the same time.
Oh, then you will take me to the Spartan Flying School?
Yes, Pebbles. Either Chuck or I will see that you get there.
Oh, whoopee! It's the cat's mustache.
Well, I guess we'd better break up now. We've got a lot of packing to do, and we've got to get some sleep.
Just the 1 minute, El Capitan. I have the good news for you.
Yes, Senor Pereira? What is it?
I have delivered the prisoners to the authorities. Some of them will be in the jail for the long time.
Well, gee, Senor Pereira, what happened to that fellow named Rossman?
They do not have the record on the man Rossman, so they turned him loose.
Oh, that's swell. He told us everything he knew, and he promised he'd go straight.
Yes, and I hope he keeps that promise, Chuck. Well, come on, everyone. Let's get together the things we'll need for the flight tomorrow.
And come on, Patsy. Let's get packed right away.
Captain Midnight and his friends packed the plane and got a few hours' sleep. Then, at daybreak, they took off from Senor Pereira's hacienda, and as we find them now, they're flying at 5,000 feet. Captain Midnight is at the controls with Chuck in the other forward seat, while Patsy and Ma Donovan are in the rear. Let's listen as Patsy exclaims.
Gee, Captain Midnight, we've flown for over 3 hours and haven't seen a thing that looks like a wrecked plane.
Yes, I know, Patsy. But we're still a long way from the border, so don't become careless. If we should fly over the ship without seeing it, we'd be out of luck.
We can't let that happen. If we did, we never would find Major Steele and Conway.
Oh, sure, and me eyes are getting tired from watching the ground below. After you look a while, it becomes just a blur.
My eyes get to feeling that way, too. And I have to make myself pick out different objects beneath it.
Well, I don't look at everything. I just try to figure out which would be the most logical spot for a ship to try and land in.
That's the system, Chuck. That's what we all can do.
But if Major Steele's motor stopped, well, he wouldn't have such choice.
Well, you see, Mrs. Donovan, it's like this. Now, it was daylight when Major Steele and Conway headed for the border. Now, I warned them about the gasoline in that ship. That being the case, Major Steele would certainly fly high enough so that if the engine quit, he would have the choice of places in which to make a forced landing. So, as we fly along, I just ask myself what spot I would make for if this engine should quit.
Why, sure. If we look at every possible landing field, we can't possibly miss them.
Oh, yes, we can, too. Don't forget, we're flying this course, but it may not be absolutely correct. They might have been forced down farther out on either side of
us. Yeah, true enough. All we can do is to keep going on this course and hope that we're close enough to see them.
What will we do if we don't see them?
Well, we'll keep going, Patsy, across the border and land at the first American airport we come to. Then I'll organize a search party and we'll come back and comb this country thoroughly.
You mean with planes?
Yes. I'll get so many ships in the air that one of the pilots is bound to see them.
And you can set up radio listening posts to try to get those signals again.
Yes, Patsy, we can do that too. And by having several different posts like that, we can tell their position within 5 or 10 miles.
Sure. You can get their position by triangulation. Whereas now, all we know is that they're somewhere along a straight line.
Well, sure, and why don't you turn on the radio again? Maybe we can hear them now.
Well, I've tried several times. We haven't had any luck.
However, quick, Captain Midnight. Look down on the left. I think I see something.
Where, Patsy, where?
Oh, I see it. What? It looks like an airplane wing.
Yes, it does. And we're going down to look.
Well, what has Patsy Donovan's keen eyes picked out? And is it, as Chuck Ramsey has exclaimed, the wing of an airplane? Has Captain Midnight's crude apparatus led them to Major Steele and Bud Conley? Listen Wednesday and find out. Tune in to Captain Midnight. Say, wasn't that something to hear from a real flying student from the Spartan School of Aeronautics? Gee, who knows? Maybe some of you fellows and girls will be going to that famous flying school yourself someday. But now, I want to tell you about the big treat that's in store for us tomorrow night. You see, every single member of Captain Midnight's 1940 Flight Patrol is going to receive, absolutely free, a great, big, beautiful...
Wait a minute, Mr. Gordon. Mum's the word.
What? Oh, I can't tell him, huh? Say, come to think of it, that's right. Well, you listen to the next adventure of Captain Midnight, and I'll tell you all about it first thing, I promise. And, oh boy, is it some surprise. You just wait and see. It's for every member, and it's absolutely free. So don't forget, tune in again Wednesday, same time, same station, for further transcribed adventures of Captain Midnight, brought to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers and Dealers. Have Major Steele and Bud Conley been found? If so, have they been rescued in time? Or is this one of Ivan Shark's planes? Be sure to listen Wednesday. Until then, this is Don Gordon, your Skelly Man, saying goodbye and happy landing!
Captain Midnight from January 15th, 1940, a syndicated broadcast on Tune to Yesterday in this hour of adventure. Let's move on to episode 2 now from January 17th, 1940, episode 228.
The Skelly Oil Company presents Captain Midnight. Captain Midnight, brought to you three times each week by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers and Dealers. But first, I know you're all waiting to hear about the big surprise gift I started to tell you about Monday. That swell new gift for every member of Captain Midnight's 1940 Flight Patrol. And say, you'd never guess what it is. It's something you couldn't get anyplace else in the world. It's really three presents all in one. Because listen, it's a picture of three of your very best friends. Captain Midnight and Chuck Ramsey and Patsy Donovan. Yes, sir. A swell big picture of all three of them, all standing together there in front of Captain Midnight's big monoplane. And what's more, this picture is autographed to you. Captain Midnight and Chuck and Patsy have all signed their full names under their pictures with a special greeting to every member of the 1940 Flight Patrol. Say, wouldn't Ivan Shark give a lot to get his hands on this picture with all our friends' names signed in their own handwriting? But believe me, Shark couldn't get this picture for any price. No, sir. They aren't for sale. They're for Flight Patrol members only. But now listen. Here's how to get your swell new picture of Captain Midnight and Chuck and Patsy absolutely free. You just stop in at your Skelly service station the next time you're out in the family car. Show your Skelly man your Flight Patrol membership card, and he'll give you your free picture right then and there. That's all there is to it. You don't need any seals or labels or box tops or anything like that. All you do is show your Flight Patrol membership card to your friendly Skelly man. He'll give you your free picture and a good big smile thrown in besides. And say, boy, won't you be proud to have your very own autographed picture of all three of your famous friends. A big, clear picture to put up in your own room or on the wall over the radio or in your secret hiding place where you keep all your other valuable treasures. Well, I know this much. You'll surely treasure this brand new picture of Captain Midnight and Chuck and Patsy. And think of it. It isn't going to cost you a single penny, not even for a stamp. Say, whatever you do, don't forget to ask Mother or Dad to stop by your Skelly service station with you the very next time you're out in the car so you can get your own free picture right away. And now to Captain Midnight. The voice heard indistinctly over the radio asking for help is believed to be that of Major Steele or Bud Conley. In an effort to find them, Captain Midnight, Chuck Ramsey, Ma, and Patsy Donovan have taken off in the blue-winged plane formerly flown by Ivan Shark, chief pilot, Gardeau. After flying for 3 hours without any success, Patsy calls out suddenly that she sees something below, and then Chuck exclaims that it looks like an airplane wing. Listen as Patsy says,
"Gosh, Captain Midnight, it's an airplane wing, all right, but it's all torn to pieces."
"There's no question about it. It's a broken wing of a plane, but whether it's from the Spartan or not, I can't tell.
Sure, and I think I see some numbers on it."
"What? What's that, Mrs. Donovan? Where do you see numbers?"
"On that thing hanging in the tree."
"What?
I see what she means. It's a different piece. Not what we were looking at before."
"Oh, sure. I see it, too. It must be part of the other wing.
And there are numbers on it, all right."
"Those will be the plane's identification numbers. We should be able to tell right away whether it's the Spartan or not."
"Oh, quick, Captain, look. I can see only three numbers. The rest must have been torn off."
"Where are they, Chuck?"
"Oh, wait, wait. I see them. And now, wait a minute. I'll bank the ship a little bit. Oh, yes. Now I can see better. The first numeral is 7, the next one is 2, and the one following that is 3. It must be the Spartan. Those were the last three numerals of our identification number. There can't be any doubt about it. And that's what's left of it."
"Oh, but if you heard Major Steele's voice, he must still be alive."
"Well, now watch it now. Uh-oh, we're down plenty low. I'm going to circle around, see if there are any signs of life. Now watch it."
"I can't understand why Major Steele picked this place."
"He didn't pick it, Chuck. Something must have happened."
"Look, Captain Midnight, look. I see something down between the trees."
"So do I. It's a fuselage. That's what it is."
"You're right, Chuck. The body of the plane is down between those trees."
"Now I can see the nose and even the propeller."
"Yeah, I saw it, too. Now I've lost it."
"Oh, the poor fellows. I guess they can't be alive."
"Gosh, Captain Midnight, how are we going to land and find out?"
"I don't know yet, Patsy. I'm beginning to wonder."
"I think I know what's happened, Captain Midnight. Major Steele was trying to get in that open place just beyond and didn't quite make it.
You're right, Chuck. I've been looking at that spot myself. I think Major Steele was trying to get in there, and he just couldn't stretch his drive far enough.
Gee, do you suppose we can land there?
I don't know. We'll have to look it over first.
Oh, sure, and I think I saw something. A man.
What?
Where was he, Ma?
Down between the branches of those trees.
Hold it now, hold it. I'm going closer.
There is someone down there. What? Oh, he's right in the cabin door.
He's trying to get out. He's looking up at it. I can see him so clearly.
Watch it, everyone. I got to pull up.
Oh, what can we do, Captain Midnight? That was Major Steele. I'm sure of it. He must be injured. And there's no telling what's happened to Bud Conley.
We've got to get first aid to them right away. But we can't take any chances of cracking up ourselves.
What about this open place? Don't you think we can get down there?
Oh, it's pretty small. But I think you can do it, Captain Midnight.
Yes, I know I can do it, Chuck, but I'm thinking about getting out again. But wait. I figured out a plan. We're going down for a landing, all right now? Buckle your belts, everyone.
There. Mine's buckled.
So are mine and Mars.
Which way are you going to land?
It all depends on the direction of the wind.
Well, the wind was from the south when we started.
Sure. We had a tailwind then.
Wait a minute. Still blowing from the south, see? See the leaves on those trees? They're turned backwards.
Oh, that makes it swell. You can go downwind, then sideslip and land against the wind. And you'll also be going uphill.
That's the idea, all right, Chuck. All right. I'm throttling the engine now.
Boy, are we losing altitude fast now.
Be sure your belts are buckled. That ground looks very rough.
I'm pulling mine up tighter. You better do the same, Ma.
Oh, sure, and mine's so tight now I can hardly breathe.
Oh, we're turning back into the wind. Oh, gosh. Look at Captain Midnight's side flip.
Oh, look out, Captain Midnight. The wings are going right into the ground.
No, no, they aren't. You wait and see.
Look at that wing come up, Ma. And we turned into the wind.
Oh, we're down below the treetops now.
Oh, look out. We're going to hit those trees.
No, we won't, Ma. Look.
See? Captain Midnight's changing direction. The plane straightened out.
Watch it now, watch it. We're going to hit.
That was sure swell. You might think we were landing on a big airport.
Oh, praise the saints. That ground sure feels good again.
All right. I'm going to let the ship coast as far as possible because the south end of the field is nearest to Major Steele and the spot.
Oh, you're not even going to be able to get there without using your engine.
Yes, yes. I'll have to give her a burst or two, all right.
A little bit more and we'll be there.
Now, the first aid kit is in the baggage compartment behind the rear seat.
I know where it is. I'll get it out.
That's the stuff, Patsy. We'll have it ready as soon as you bring the ship to a stop.
Shall we bother to turn the plane around?
No, we won't do that. We haven't got time now. All right, here we are. I'll cut the switch.
I've got the first aid kit.
All right, come on now. Let's pile out. Looks like rough going, so we'll have to help Mrs. Donovan.
Okay, I'll get the door.
Come on, let's hurry.
Come on, we're almost there. I see the nose of the ship.
Look, Major Steele seems terribly weak. He can hardly walk.
Oh, Major Steele! Major Steele!
I'd hardly know him. Look at the beard on his face.
Captain Midnight. Chuck.
Barry. Barry, what in the world has happened to you?
Conley. He's inside. Help him first.
Well, what's the matter with him, Barry? Is he hurt bad?
He didn't get hurt. Plain. He's sick. Some kind of a fever.
Oh, have you got any water, Major Steele?
Yes. Donovan. In a thermos jug inside the cabin door.
Oh, quick, quick, Patsy. Give me that first aid kit.
Go in. Go in. Help him, quick.
Are you all right, Barry?
Yes, I'm all right. Just a little bit weak. Go in with Conley. He's in the cabin.
All right. We'll be out in a minute. Come on, Mrs. Donovan. You and I'll go in first.
Is there anything Patsy and I can do?
Yes, Chuck. Go back to the ship and bring back that small alcohol stove. Open a can of bouillon and fix some broth for Major Steele.
Well, that'll be fine. But hurry. Hurry to Conley.
Patsy and I'll be back in a jiffy.
All right, Mrs. Donovan. Let me help you into the cabin. Yeah, that's it.
There, now, I'm all right. Oh, thanks alive. There's Conley on the floor, lying on some blankets.
Yes. He's got a high fever, I can see that.
Oh, there's some quinine tablets in the first aid kit. We've got to get a couple down his throat.
Oh, yes. There's the thermos jug that Barry spoke of.
Oh, here. Here's a bottle of quinine tablets. Now, give me the cup and the thermos jug.
Oh, wait a minute. All right, here you are.
You won't be able to get him to swallow these tablets the way they are. We'd have to grind them into powder.
Oh, I dropped them in this cup. Here's a little stick. I'll grind them into powder with that.
There. There you are.
It won't take a second to grind them up.
Oh, sure. They're crumbling up good. Now. There. There. That's enough. Now pour some water into the cup. There. There. That should be enough. Now hold him up if you can and try to get this down his throat.
All right. Uh-oh. Come on now, Bud. Come on, old boy. We're trying to help you now. We're going to bring you out of this, Bud.
Oh, sure, he won't open his mouth.
Well, I'll see if I can force it open.
Oh.
Come on, Bud.
Oh, there, now you've got it open.
All right. There, Bud, there. And now you're all right. Now lean back in these blankets.
Oh. Sure, he got it down all right, and it'll do him a lot of good.
How high a fever do you think he's got?
Oh, about 104, I guess. But I'll take it in a couple of minutes to be sure.
What do you think we'd better do with him, Mrs. Donovan?
Oh, I don't think it's safe to move him. That is, unless you can fly him out of here in the plane.
I don't know about that. When I landed here, I figured if necessary, I'd have Chuck fly the ship out empty and go for help. Now, with Connolly this sick, I may have to change my plan.
Oh, sure, and what you ought to do is to get Connolly to a hospital right away. And Major Steele, too, for that matter.
I don't think we can take both of them out at the same time. We may not be able to take off even one. I'll have to go and take a look at that field first.
Well, in the meantime, we've got to break up this fever if we can. If it lasts much longer, well...
Yes. You stay here, Mrs. Donovan, while I go out and see Major Steele. Between us, we'll decide what's best to do.
All right, Captain. I'd be giving Connolly some more quinine and a little swine.
Good.
How's Connolly, Captain?
He's in pretty bad shape, Barry.
Yes, he's got some kind of fever. Just what kind, I don't know.
How long has he been sick?
Well, about 5 days. But the fever's been getting worse every day.
Well, what happened to the first aid kit? I always used to keep one in the Spartan.
We threw it overboard.
Threw it overboard?
Yes, we were having engine trouble. We were getting lower and lower. Finally, just clipping the treetop. We kept throwing out things to stay in the air. Those blankets Connolly is lying on were all we had left.
Yes, I guess something like that must have happened. Otherwise, you never would have landed here.
I was trying to get to that open place, straight ahead. The place where you landed. But we just couldn't make it.
You're lucky to be alive, judging by what I see.
Both wings were torn out, and we settled into the tree. Luckily, the engine wasn't hurt. We had some gas left. Not very good, though. That's what let us down.
Yes, I was afraid of that gas. Remember, I told you about it.
We thought we could get to the border, but she kept overheating and finally cut out. Twice a day, I've been running the engine for about 5 minutes and calling for help over the radio. But we're down here so low, and engines kept missing. I didn't know whether the signals got out.
Yes, they got out all right. That's the only way we found you.
What are you going to do, Captain? I know you won't have an easy time taking off from that small clearing here. There are too many of us for your ship. And, well, just what are you going to do?
It's a tough problem, Barry. But it's got to be answered. Because a man's life depends on it.
Well, in coming to the help of Major Steele and Bud Connolly, Captain Midnight has again made a dangerous landing in a small jungle clearing. The lives of several people are now at stake. What can be done? Tune in to Captain Midnight. Be sure to listen Friday. Until then, this is Don Gordon, your Skelly Man, saying goodbye and happy landing!
Captain Midnight, with their 228th broadcast released for syndication on July 17, 1940, by the Skelly Oil Company. This turned out to be one of the more popular kid shows of its era. After the run we're hearing now, when the show moved to the Mutual Broadcasting System and took over for Little Orphan Annie, it really boomed among kids listening into radio, having similarities to Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, and the Air Adventures of Jimmy Allen, and also offering the mail-in premiums we've heard. A year after making it to the Mutual Broadcasting System, over 1 million kids had signed up for the Flight Patrol, later to be called the Secret Squadron, Captain Midnight's Radio Club. And now it's episode 3 of our four-string presentation from January 19, 1940.
Now to Captain Midnight. The famous pilot, accompanied by Chuck Ramsey and Ma and Patsy Donovan, has found Major Barry Steele and Bud Connolly in a deserted part of Mexico, several hundred miles below the American border. Connolly, however, is dangerously ill with some kind of tropical fever. Major Steele himself is weak and thin from lack of food. It is now an hour after Captain Midnight made his landing. Patsy and Ma Donovan are caring for the rescued pilot, while Captain Midnight and Chuck are looking over the small clearing in which Captain Midnight landed the plane. Let's listen as Captain Midnight says...
To tell you the truth, Chuck, I knew when I landed here that I couldn't take off again with the plane loaded as it was, even under the most favorable conditions. And now, since I've been on the ground, I know such a takeoff would be impossible.
Gosh, then what are we going to do?
You're going to make the takeoff, Chuck. After watching you take that plane out of the small square in front of the temple, I'm well sold in your ability. And don't forget this. There's 50 pounds difference in weight between us.
You want me to take off with Connolly?
Well, I'm not so sure yet, Chuck. It depends on what Mrs. Donovan says about his condition. I may have you take off alone, go for help, and then return. Or we may decide to take a chance in sending Connolly with you.
Is Connolly's condition very serious?
Yes, Chuck, I think it is. Mrs. Donovan hasn't said much. But what she hasn't said carries more weight than spoken words. Yeah, I've seen a lot of tropical fever, Chuck. It's bad.
But Ma Donovan's doing all she can to check it, isn't she? Oh,
of course she is, Chuck. But don't forget, We're not equipped like a hospital. All we've got is a few quinine tablets.
Oh, gosh. If the wind would only change.
Yes, we'd better pray for that. Because I'm afraid Bud Connolly's life depends on it.
I've been looking at the field again, Captain Midnight. But there just isn't any other way to get off.
No, Chuck. I've studied this clearing from every angle. A shift in the wind is our only chance.
Of course, if I'm to take off alone, or even with Connolly, we can do a few things to lighten the plane without dumping any gas.
Sure we can, Chuck. And I'm taking that into my calculations. Now, I figure we'll take out the right front seat, the two rear seats, and clean out the baggage compartment. We could even take out part of the wall leading from the cabin to the baggage compartment and fix a place for Connolly on the floor.
Sure, we can do all those things, and they'll help a lot, too. Oh, gee.
What's the matter now, Chuck?
Well, I was just thinking. We don't know how far away from civilization we are, and it certainly isn't likely we could get Connolly out on foot. Or do you think we could?
No, Chuck, no. I don't think there's a chance. We might start and find it would take a couple of weeks to get out. We haven't got enough provisions for a trip like that. And our very existence would depend on our ability to shoot game for food.
And in the meantime, Connolly would die.
Yes, that's certain.
Well, so our only hope lies in using our plane. And we're even prevented from doing that.
I know. Well, come on, Chuck. Let's go back to camp and see how Major Steele and Connolly are getting along.
Okay, let's go. Well, I certainly hope he's going to be all right.
Hello, Chuck.
Well, how's everything, Patsy? How's Major Steele?
Well, I can speak for myself now, thanks to Patsy and Mrs. Donovan. That broth they gave me has made me feel like a new man.
Well, I'm certainly glad to hear that, Barry. Yeah, you look a lot better, too.
Yes, I feel I'm going to live now. But before you got here, I had my doubts.
How's Bud Connolly?
You'll have to ask Patsy about that. She was in to see her mother a couple of minutes ago.
What about her, Patsy?
Well, I just helped Ma give him some more quinine, but I'm afraid he isn't any better.
Did Mrs. Donovan take his temperature?
Yes, it was 104.5.
Good night. 104.5. Well, that's pretty high, isn't it?
Yes, it's plenty high, Chuck. Can't stand that very long.
Yes, I know we can't. We're going to get him out of here just as quickly as we can. But for the time being, our hands are tied.
Well, that doesn't sound very good. What did you find out when you looked at the field?
We found out this much. A takeoff can't be made until the wind shifts to the north.
What direction is it blowing from now? I can't feel any breeze down here.
No, we're protected under the trees. But the wind is coming from the south.
And it's got to shift around to the north, you say?
That's it.
But gee, Captain Midnight, the wind might not shift for days.
Yes, I know. That's true, Patsy. And if it doesn't shift, it's going to put us in a bad situation.
You mean us or Bud Connolly?
Well, primarily Bud Connolly. But it may put us in a bad situation, too. We only have provisions enough for a few days. And so far, I haven't seen a bit of game.
No, it's plenty scarce, and I can't understand it, because this is a wild country.
Oh, by the way, I was going to ask you, have you done any exploring? That is, before you became so weak?
Yes, both of us. Before Connolly got sick, tramped around for miles. But we didn't find a sign of human life. We could only estimate our position roughly, and from the map, we were afraid we were some distance from any town. We considered starting out on foot, but finally decided to be more dangerous than staying with the ship.
I think you made a wise decision. If you had started to walk out and then Connolly got sick, you'd have been sunk.
Yeah, there isn't the slightest doubt about that.
Gosh, Major Steele, you probably thought that when you didn't come back to us, that we'd start looking for you.
No, Chuck. I had very little hope of that. The situation being what it was, when I left you, I was afraid your hands would be full.
They were, Barry. Only too full. As a matter of fact, I think we were lucky to get away as quickly as we did.
Well, go ahead. Tell me about it. There isn't anything we can do for the time being. Mrs. Donovan is taking care of Connolly, and you can't make a takeoff until the wind changes. So let us know what happens.
Well, the thing you'll be most glad to hear is that Senor Pareda and his daughter Dolores are safe.
Well, thank heaven for that.
And that's the good news we have, Major Steele. But we've got some bad news, too.
Bad news? What could be bad news after that?
Chuck's right, Barry. We do have some bad news for you. Now, you remember that you and Connolly were trapped in that deserted cabin on the edge of that little mountain field where you landed?
I'll say I remember. That was one of the narrowest escapes I ever had. We couldn't get out of the shack because the place was surrounded by armed men. And then, the dirty rat set fire to it.
And if you hadn't found that hole in the floor leading to the old mine shaft, you wouldn't have had a chance.
No, Chuck. Connolly and I would have been just as dead as that old tree trunk that you were sitting on.
But I still haven't told you the bad news. Who do you think those men were working for? The ones who had you trapped.
I haven't got the faintest idea. Mexican bandits, I suppose.
It was a lot worse than that, Major Steele.
You tell him, Chuck.
Okay. Well, Major Steele, those men were working for Ivan Shark.
Ivan Shark? Well, what do you know about that?
Yes, it was Ivan Shark. He'd stolen Senor Pareda's hacienda and was trying to make away with both the Pareda treasure and the huge herd of cattle owned by the Pareda estate.
Why, it seems almost incredible. But what's the bad news?
Well, when things ended, Ivan Shark escaped.
Escaped? Well, cheer up, Captain. After all, you're all alive and have your health. We'd better be thankful for that.
And we are, too. But it would have been a lot better if we had captured Ivan Sharp.
And we almost had him in our hands, too, Major Steele. The morning he escaped, Captain Midnight and I missed capturing him by about a minute.
Well, a minute can be like 24 hours sometimes, Chuck. Some of the minutes I've been through lately have been like that.
And another bad thing. Shark's chief lieutenant, his daughter Fury, an Oriental named Fang, and a fellow named Gardo all escaped with him.
Did he escape by plane?
Yes, Barry. In that same plane Shark was flying when he was going under the name of Douglas Chadwick.
Yes, I remember. A bi-motored silver-winged monoplane.
That's it.
Same plane passed over this place the day before yesterday, about noon.
What?
I thought sure the pilot would see the torn wings of the Spartan on top of the tree.
Lupin Loops, what do you know about that?
Wait a minute. Which direction was he flying?
Almost straight north. The same course that you were flying.
Oh, gee, Captain Midnight. Why, Shark must have headed for the United States.
Evidently, because Connie and I were flying on the same course. We were headed for the nearest United States border.
Well, of all the nerve.
Oh, I wish I knew where he was headed.
Well, there's no telling about that.
Well, I wish I had known who was flying that ship. I'd have tried to broadcast a warning. Though I guess it wouldn't have done any good, because you're the only ones who heard my call for help.
But you haven't told us what happened to you, Barry.
Well, there isn't very much to tell. As I said, we were headed for the nearest point on the border. About 100 miles after we left you that morning, the engine began to overheat. But it was very gradual, otherwise I would have turned back.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. The gas you had wasn't suitable for the Spartan's engine. But then what happened next?
Well, as the engine got hotter, we started losing revs. And then, little by little, we started losing altitude. There was only one thing to do, keep on going. I thought there might be a chance to keep the plane in the air until we get across the border. But finally, even after we'd thrown out everything that we could, we were right over the treetop. At last, I saw we couldn't make it. I was trying to pancake into that clearing ahead when we mushed into the trees.
That must have been a terrible moment.
We thought we were finished, I can tell you that. But we had strapped ourselves in tightly and weren't going very fast. And when we started scraping in the treetops, I started pulling the nose up. Succeeded in killing some speed that way.
Well, Barry, you and Conley are lucky to be alive. Come on, Chuck. Let's get back to the plane. We've got a job to do.
Okay, Captain Midnight. What is it?
I'm going to send a code message to the authorities to be on the lookout for Shark's plane. Then, we're going to start lightening the ship so we can be ready when the wind shifts.
Look, there's Ma in the doorway of the Spartan.
Oh, Captain Midnight, can you come see
you? Oh, certainly, Mrs. Donovan. Wait a minute, Chuck. I'll be right back.
Okay.
What is it, Mrs. Donovan?
Please come inside. I want you to look at Mr. Conley.
Oh, yes, of course I will.
I'm afraid Mr. Conley isn't any better.
Yes. Face looks very flushed. Oh, I see you have the thermometer in his mouth.
Yes, and I want you to look at his temperature. Here's the thermometer.
See.
Can you see? What is it now?
Yes. Yes, I see. It's 105.
Captain Midnight, we've got to do something for Mr. Conley. I've done all I could, and yet his temperature keeps going up. That can't go on much longer. If it does, you know what that means.
Bud Conley is in a very critical condition, or Mrs. Donovan wouldn't have brought Captain Midnight into the cabin to tell him what she did. But what can Captain Midnight do? The only chance of helping Conley is to get him to a hospital at once by plane. But the plane cannot take off until the wind shifts, if then. What will happen? Can some way be found of saving Bud Conley's life? With the takeoff by airplane impossible, are Captain Midnight and his party stranded beyond reach of help? Be sure to listen Monday. Until then, this is Don Gordon, your Skelly Man, saying goodbye and happy landing!
Captain Midnight from January 19th, 1940. If you're just tuning in, this is Tune 2 Yesterday with an hour of adventure. I'm your host, Mark LeVeillonier. We're bringing you four broadcasts of Captain Midnight from January of 1940. And now the final, marking program number 230 for sponsor Skelly Oil from January 22nd, 1940.
Company presents Captain Midnight. Captain Midnight, brought to you three times each week by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers and Dealers.
Skelly, you know, was the originator of tailor-made gasoline and motor oil. The famous Skelly Aeromax gasoline and Skelly Tagoline motor oil. Tailor-made for your weather. But first, tell me this. How many of you fellows and girls stopped at your Skelly service station this weekend to get your free picture of Captain Midnight and his two young friends, Chuck and Patsy? Well, if you haven't got yours yet, let me urge you to get one from your Skelly man the next time you're out in the family car. Because, look, these aren't any ordinary pictures, you know. You can't even buy pictures like this anywhere in the world. But you can get them free at your Skelly service station if you're a member of the 1940 Flight Patrol. And say what's more, this picture is autographed to you by all three of these famous members of your own big radio club. Captain Midnight, Chuck Ramsey, and Patsy Donovan. They're all dressed in their flying suits and helmets in the picture, too. And they're standing right beside Captain Midnight's sleek monoplane. Boy, oh boy, will you be proud to show this swell picture to all your friends. You'll pin it up on the wall of your room, too, I'll bet. And you'll think more of it than almost any picture you ever own. But look, did you know this? You don't have to spend a single penny to get this marvelous picture of Captain Midnight and his two young friends. No, sir. Not even a penny for a stamp. You don't need any seals or labels or box tops or anything like that either. All you do is show your Skelly man your Flight Patrol membership card. And he'll give you one of these swell pictures absolutely free right then and there. Just stop at your Skelly service station the next time you're out driving with mother or dad. Now, if you're not a member of the 1940 Flight Patrol, your Skelly man will tell you how to join. And that's free, too. Why, you even get a free Flight Patrol Medal of Membership that spins. But above all, you'll want your swell new picture of Captain Midnight and those two grand youngsters, Chuck Ramsey and Patsy Donovan. So remember, to get your own free copy of this marvelous picture, ask mother or dad to stop in at your Skelly service station the next time you're driving by. Show your Skelly man your Flight Patrol membership card and get your very own autographed picture of Captain Midnight and his friends absolutely free. And now to Captain Midnight. Unless medical attention is obtained for Bud Conley, who is stricken with fever, Conley is liable to die. He, his chief, Major Barry Steele, and Captain Midnight's party are far from civilization in Old Mexico. The clearing where Captain Midnight landed his plane is so small that a takeoff from it cannot be made except in one direction, and then after the wind shifts. It is now early afternoon, and Captain Midnight and Chuck Ramsey are standing near their plane on the edge of the field talking things over. Let's listen as Captain Midnight says.
No, Chuck, no, there hasn't been any change in the wind at all. If anything, it's stronger.
Oh, gosh. I was sure hoping that wind would shift. But now there doesn't seem to be any chance.
I'm afraid not. Sky is clear. Certainly looks as if conditions are going to stay as they are indefinitely.
From what Maude Donovan says, I guess Bud Conley must be pretty sick.
She didn't say in so many words, but I don't think she believes there's a chance for him. We can't get him out of here right away.
Gee, isn't there something we can do? Something we hadn't thought of before?
I don't know what it'd be, Chuck. Of course, we might have overlooked something.
You radioed a code message about Ivan Chuck's plane, didn't you?
Yes, Chuck, I did. And at the same time, I sent a message telling him about our situation here. And there's nothing more I could say.
They could drop provisions for us.
Sure. That wouldn't help Bud Conley.
Well, they could drop medicine for him.
Yeah, they could do that, too. That isn't getting him to a hospital, and that's what he needs. It wouldn't do any good for anyone to land here. They'd be in just as bad a fix as we are, unable to fly out again.
Has Conley got a family?
Yes. He's got a wife and four children.
Oh, gosh, Captain Midnight, that's terrible. We just can't let him die.
Well, listen, Chuck. I've thought of one thing, but it might take too much time.
What is it, Captain Midnight?
Now, look down the field here. You will probably be the one who has to take off. Now, the plane will be turned around with its tail right between these trees. The takeoff will be straight ahead toward the north. You see that, don't you?
But I see those tall trees in the way.
Yes, you're right. And that's the plan I had in mind.
Well, gee, Captain Midnight, what about those trees?
Now, look. Take a careful look, Chuck. And just try to imagine what it would be like if some of those trees weren't there.
Why, if it weren't for three or four of those high trees, oh, there'd be a lot more room for a takeoff.
Absolutely, Chuck. As a matter of fact, if just three of those trees were out of the way, it'd make all the difference in the world. In fact, I think that you, weighing less than I, could take off at Bud Conley, even downwind, with those trees gone.
I could do it. I'm sure I could. Oh, but how can we get rid of those three trees? Look how big they are.
Yes, that's the whole trouble, Chuck. All we've got is a very small hatchet. It would take days to chop through those big trunks.
And also, you wouldn't know which way they were going to fall.
Well, I don't think that would make much difference. The wheels of the plane would be off the ground before you got that far. Those three trees were out of the way. We could get Conley out of here even if the wind doesn't change. Yeah, but I'm afraid there's no way to get them down short of a tornado.
Do you suppose there's anything else we could take out of the plane to make it lighter?
No. Done all we can. Anything else would weaken the structure.
I guess you're right. But gosh, Captain Midnight, what are we going to do anyway? I mean, when we do get out. Well, we can't stay here forever, even if we are too late to save Conley.
Well, the first thing we've got to do, that is after we get across the border from here, is to go back to Senor Paredes Hacienda for Pinky Drake and Slim Poole. Then put Pablo in that flying school, and then
we'll... Yes, but what about you? What's going to happen to you?
I've still got that big job in my hands, Chuck.
Ivan Shark?
Yes. I don't know what the pursuit of Shark might lead to. It may take me around the world again before I'm through.
But can't I come along? I've helped you before, well, at least a little bit.
You've no idea how much you've helped me. And it isn't just the actual help you've given either. It's the, well, the company, the companionship that has meant more than anything else to me.
I'm glad to hear you say that. After all, I'm just a kid. I know I make a lot of mistakes, and I'm not, well, the sort of a companion an older person would be.
I've come to rely on you so much that I wouldn't quite know what to do without you.
And you've been just like a father to me. To be truthful, you've been more than a father to me.
What do you mean, Chet?
Well, you know, it's like this. I don't know whether you've ever noticed it or not, but lots of kids never have any fun with their fathers. They, well, they respect them too much. Oh, gosh, I'm getting sort of all mixed up.
No, Chuck, no. You mean that lots of kids respect their fathers so much that they're afraid to have any fun with them.
Well, that's it. That's it exactly. Mm-hmm. The kid looks up to his father so much that his father seems, well, he seems too far away from him.
Yes, I know only too well what you're talking about. Now, Chuck, I've seen hundreds of fathers and sons like that. And I've always said that if I had a son of my own, I certainly wouldn't be like that at all.
You wouldn't be, and well, you haven't been with me. You take me into your confidence. You let me know what you're thinking about, what you're trying to do, and I guess lots of fathers don't do that.
No, Chuck, they don't. That's where they make a big mistake. They gradually grow apart, and they finally live in different worlds. The boy doesn't know anything about his father's problems, and the father doesn't know anything about his son's. Except when the boy does something wrong.
And then he gets punished.
Yes. And that tends to separate them farther than ever.
Maybe if the father and son were closer together, the son wouldn't do things that he'd have to be punished for.
You know, Chuck, you're getting to be quite a philosopher.
Well, anyway, I'm glad you and I aren't that way. You know what my problems are, and I know what yours are.
Yes. That brings me back to what started this discussion. It may be that much as we both would dislike it, it would be better if I would work alone for a while.
But why? Honestly, I don't see why.
Well, now, listen. You want to be a pilot, don't you, Chuck?
Well, of course. I can fly some now. At least I can get a ship up and down.
Don't say you can. Not a plenty tight spot, too.
But merely being able to handle the controls of a ship, it doesn't make a pilot.
There, you're right. Merely being able to handle the controls of an airplane doesn't make a pilot. That's only a very small part of it. There are probably thousands of pilots who could take a big airliner up from the field, circle it, and then make a perfect landing. But do you suppose that same pilot could take that same airliner off, loaded with passengers, fly from one city to another 700 miles away through tough weather, where he had to fly by instruments and radio, and get his passengers there safely?
Probably less than 1 out of 10 who could.
Less than 1 out of 10? Percentage is much smaller than that. To be a perfectly competent airline pilot, it takes the ability to fly. That's elementary. Then, beyond that, it takes absolute presence of mind, quick thinking, and above all, the thing that's known as character.
Character? I've heard that word a lot, and yet I don't think I know exactly what it means.
Stability. The thing which can be relied upon. Reliability.
I guess that's important in anything, not just airplane flying.
You're right, Chuck. I rather think that reliability is the most important characteristic in the world.
But to come back to what we were talking about, you spoke about a separation, and you asked me if I wanted to be a good pilot.
Well, now, look here, Chuck. Going around with me, you learn a certain amount, that's true. But you don't learn as much, as thoroughly, as you would if you were going through the regular routine of a flying school.
You mean you want me to go to a flying school?
I think it would be an excellent thing for you. Oh, I'd see you often. During part of the year, your vacations, we could be together. And I'd test you out to see how much you've learned. Then when you get through, I'll put the finishing touches on you.
Gee, and then what?
Well, I don't know. I've got to stay in the flying business, I know that. There are plenty of opportunities for new airlines, Chuck. Yeah, I might start one. You could be one of my pilots. I'll give you an interest in the business, and then when you get good enough, you could be chief pilot.
Gosh, wouldn't that be swell?
You bet. Yes, Chuck, that sounds pretty good. But then, I guess we'd better quit daydreaming and get back to business here.
Oh, just one thing more.
Yeah?
Patsy Donovan can be one of our stewardesses.
Of course. Good. It's a foregone conclusion. And we'll get Steve Donovan and make a pilot out of him, too. And, well, now let's see. Are there any other members of the family?
Well, there's Pinky and Slim. What do we do with them?
Pinky and Slim. Say, I know. We'll have them ride back and forth on the line to amuse the passengers with their squabbles.
Well, they sure keep them amused, all right. Oh, don't forget, there's Pablo. He's almost one of the family now.
Oh, sure. Well, we might have a branch going down here into Mexico. He could fly on that division.
Well, look. Here comes our stewardess.
What in the world have you two been doing all this time?
Well, to tell you the truth, Patsy, I think I've been doing a little daydreaming.
Oh, so that's it. What about the wind? Is it just as strong as ever?
Gosh, I'm afraid it is, Patsy.
Yes, it is. Oh, any change in Bud Conley's condition?
No, he's just about the same.
Well, I'm going back to talk to Major Steele. You better stay here, Chuck, and let me know if that wind changes.
I'll stay, too, then, because Ma doesn't need me for a while.
All right. You stay here with Chuck. I'll see you both after a while.
Tell me the truth, Patsy. Is Mr. Conley worse?
Yes, Chuck, I think he is. I can tell it by the way Ma acts.
Oh, gee, Patsy, this is terrible. Mr. Conley's going to die of that fever if we don't fly him out of here. Hey, what are you looking at?
Quick, Chuck. Look over there.
What is it? What are you looking at? I don't see anything.
The top of that ridge on the right, Chuck. See? Floating up in the air. What? It looks like smoke.
Smoke? Blazing beacons, Patsy. It is smoke. Maybe this will show us a way out. Maybe it will mean help. Come on, let's investigate.
Well, can Patsy and Chuck be right? Is it really smoke they see at the top of the nearby ridge? Major Steele said he had explored the region and had found no sign of human habitation. What will Chuck and Patsy discover when they climb to the top of the ridge? Be sure to listen Wednesday. Until then, this is Don Gordon, your Skelly Man, saying goodbye and happy landing!
Captain Midnight, starring Bill Boucher, on Tune 2 Yesterday, wrapping up an hour of adventure in your theater of the mind. I hope you enjoyed those broadcasts, and do hope you'll be with us next time for more great shows from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.